Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, have you ever considered being a foster carer for children who need someone to look after them and to give them a good start in life? Do you have any idea what would be expected of you? It's something that we've talked about on the programme in the past, but we are going to revisit it. And to tell us about their experiences of being foster parents are Jenny and Steve, who've been fostering for a number of years, and they join me in the studio now. Good evening, both.
Evening.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Jenny, first of all, when did you begin fostering and why?
It's our anniversary in March. We've been fostering for 30 years this year.
And how did you get involved with that?
I've worked with children since I left school, which was an awful long time ago. And then, what happened, Steve?
Yeah, Jen was childminding. She'd started from home, and demand was difficult. A sister had got a daughter who she needed childcare for. So Jen was childminding from a sister's address in Kidderminster. And while she was there, she was asked to do some daycare work for the local authority for Worcestershire County Council. And enjoyed that. Shortly after that, the childcare in Kidderminster wasn't required anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was me that suggested, you know, why don't we look at fostering? So we inquired with the local authority, and it all sort of...
We just looked in the yellow pages, didn't we, back then?
Well, that's what you did in those days. I hope you don't mind my asking, do you have children of your own?
Yes.
So how did that blend in with bringing your own children up and fostering as well?
When we started fostering, our daughter was three. We've only got the one daughter. I only gave
birth to one child.
Yeah. But it's all about maintaining a distance between the ages. So we didn't want to be fostering children at the same sort of age as our daughter.
Oh, I see. Why?
Well, that's how we started, actually. We started with younger children, didn't we? It didn't really work.
Why didn't it work?
I think it was direct competition. Yeah. Like, when Steve came home from work, they would all run to him, Daddy, because he was the daddy figure. And Sarah found that really, really difficult. So we decided...
Yeah, well, we were on a training course with other foster carers, and... they were involved in fostering teenagers, and we thought, well, we hadn't got particular experience of working with teenagers because our daughter was only three, but we decided to move into teenage fostering, and that really is what we've been doing for the majority of the time that we've been foster carers.
Because then everybody got their own slice of us, their own time with us.
Yeah.
When they were at school, she had 100% of attention, and then... when they came home from school, everybody had the attention and she had their attention. And then when they went to bed, she went to bed much earlier than they did, they had the whole of our attention. So it just worked for us.
How did you fit this in, or how do you fit this in with employment?
At that particular time, Jen wasn't in employment, so she was at home full-time as a foster carer. I was working full-time in the construction industry then, and was working some pretty long hours. I had a number of jobs, and then had a period of time where we were both at home fostering, because we were fostering three teenagers at the time, plus our own daughter, who was a teenager. I was the only man in the house at the time, and we'd only got one bathroom, so it was...
I'm saying nothing.
Yeah. Mornings were interesting. And so, yeah, I stayed at home. We increased up to three. And then things became a little more difficult, so I returned back to work probably about 10 years ago, again full-time. I actually moved into working in children's residential units. That was through the qualifications that I'd received or attained through being a foster carer through NVQ. Then, yeah, it became a bit of a busman's holiday when you came home then, when you're working in children's residential units and then you're working, not working, but you're sort of fostering at home. Mm. So you're working sometimes.
And it must be
issues.
Difficult to leave that work head behind. And then, as you referred to, Jenny, the daddy figure, the father figure, put that hat on.
Yeah.
And when you come home.
Yeah.
And also to have time for yourselves as well, which is also important.
It was difficult.
I mean, how many children do you have at any one time then? If we just park your own daughter just aside with all due respect to her, but, you know, how many fostering children do you have?
We used to be approved for three.
Yes.
Our current approval's for two. But at the present time, our 13-year-old grandson lives with us as well. So we've got three teenage boys with us at the moment.
So what qualities and experience do you think that you both have that makes good foster parents? For anybody that's listening now, what have you got that the rest of us haven't?
Well, I think everybody has, but it's how you plumb it. It's patience.
Bit of patience.
A lot of patience.
A lot of a sense of humour.
Yeah. And I think you go on a search for understanding because you deal with a lot of very challenging and difficult behaviours. But once you can understand the reasons behind the behaviour, it makes it a lot less personal.
Yes.
And I think that when you start fostering, it can be very difficult because the behaviours that the kids can exhibit are aimed generally at you, although it's not you that really is the target.
I mean, let's face it, the children come from disadvantaged backgrounds and all sorts of backgrounds that have been very, very challenging, probably emotionally and physically to them. And then, of course, they come into your care and they come to, you know, a safe, loving home that's warm and there's food on the table and so on and so forth. And they perhaps bring some of those behavioural traits with them because they haven't adjusted to, you know, the archetypal norm.
Yeah, and I think it's been one of the things that sticks in my mind from training I've done years ago was if it takes 8, 9, 10 years for a child, a young person, to become what they are, to change that doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It's a slow, steady process, and you have to be very consistent in your approach. And we have to work together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we have to have a solid base, the two of us.
Yeah,
well.
Absolutely. I mean, how many children have you fostered to date, Jenny?
104.
Good Lord.
I don't know why I've kept count, but I have. 104 young people.
So how does the process work, and how are you matched to a child or children, or how are they matched to you?
Okay, I think it depends upon... our actual approval is from 0 to 18 for short-term, long-term. But we have a preference, and I think generally foster care agencies and local authorities will approve for that wide range, so that if carers decide they want to move from one particular age range, they don't have to go back through fostering panel and be approved again. But we have a preference, and really for us, we really don't like to go much below sort of 10, 11 years old, because we know what works for us.
And things can happen. Sometimes you just become a place of safety for a very limited time, then that young person can move on.
I mean, but, you know, 104 sounds like a lot, and some of those were very short. Mm-hmm. And some were planned to be very short because we've done a number of emergency placements where obviously a place is needed immediately before proper arrangements can be made. But certainly the young people that we've got now, and a lot of the young people we've had have been planned. Our supervising social worker would come out with a sort of a pen picture of that young person, and we'll go through it and we'd discuss whether we felt that we could meet their needs.
So how does the process actually start for somebody who's never fostered before and they think, right, you know, let's do it? What sort of, you know, sort of process do you go through?
Well, you start with an inquiries meeting, don't you? Well, we did, and I'm sure it's still the same. Mm. You go along to an inquiries meeting where there's social workers and there's foster carers as well, and learn more about what you're putting your toe into, what you're up for. And I think it's really handy to be able to talk to foster carers. They've been doing it a while, because there's nothing like somebody who's got the T-shirt.
Yeah. And so from the point that you made that initial application or that inquiry meeting to the point that you received your first child, sort of what length of time was that roughly?
It was a long time ago and it's hard to remember.
I think it's about 8-9 months.
Yeah. Mm.
It's a bit like a baby. It's about 8-9 months.
Yeah. I think currently, I think the aim is within 6 months.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it is a process where... some people may feel it's intrusive because the fostering agency needs to know about all of your background and about your life and about the difficulties that you've encountered in your life to make sure that you're a safe person to care for other people's children.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think it's important to point out here that anybody can foster as long as they meet the requirements of the local authority. So whether somebody is in a same-sex relationship or a same-sex marriage or civil partnership or actually living alone.
Single carer.
As long as that they meet the needs of the local authority, that they can do that as well. I mean, what sort of challenges did you face and how did you overcome them? Because it can't all be plain sailing, surely.
It's definitely not all plain sailing. But they are challenges, yes, but it's looking at a challenge and seeing a behaviour, but seeing the reasons behind it, not just seeing the behaviour that's so vital.
And I think as you do it over the years, you develop the skills of managing a behaviour without... A lot of it is de-escalation. We've worked with a lot of young people who've got very strong fight or flight reflexes because of the experiences that they've had, and it's you can't challenge a young person like that directly because it's going to end up in a very difficult situation. So you learn how to manage things and to work in maybe a bit of a less direct way.
Yeah, certainly. We've learnt that.
Well, what do you ever hear from the children that you have fostered and how they're getting on since they've left your care? Are they allowed to make contact with you?
Yes, yeah. And we've got a lot of children that we've still retained contact with. That can be a regular and it can be unregular. We've got a young lady that moved in with us on November the 3rd, 1999, for 2 weeks. And she's still very, very much part of our family. Mm. What we say is we were always meant to be mother and daughter. It just took us 11 years to find each other. She's godmother to our grandchildren, and she's our daughter in every other way.
And the rise of social media and Facebook. Before, young people had come, they'd move on, and there was no real way of getting in touch unless they were going to sort of knock on the door. And that's obviously very difficult for a lot of young people to deal with, even after they've left care and moved on. But with Facebook, it's very easy for a young person to sort of pop in and say, thanks for what you've done, and leave it at that.
But before Facebook, you never know when you've made a difference.
Yeah.
We had a young lady that lived with us for quite a short period, didn't she?
Yeah.
And when she returned home, we actually looked at each other and thought, did we actually achieve anything there? But years, and I mean years later, I was vacuuming and the phone rang, the landline rang, and this girl said, is that Jenny? And I said, yeah. She gave me her name and she said, I just wanted you to know what a difference you'd made in my life.
Mm.
You gave me a taste of what a regular family looked like. And now I've got a husband, a child of my own, a full-time job. And I don't want to speak to you, you know, again. I just wanted to say thank you and put the phone down. Left me in tears. but just put the phone down.
And what did that mean to you to receive that call?
Meant everything. I mean, it just makes it all worthwhile. And sometimes it is a really hard job, but it made every second worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. How do you cope with returning the children after fostering them, whether, as you say, Steve, sometimes it's been short-term or an emergency placement. So if it's emergency, you may not have had the time to build up that relationship with them. But if somebody comes and stays with you for 6 months or 12 months, then surely there is the start of that bond that's created. So when that person moves on, as you said earlier on, Jenny, how do you deal with that? Because you must get attached to them as much as they get attached to you.
The experience that we have and the skills that we've developed over the years, we tend to have quite challenging young teenagers placed with us, and generally they're not returning home. And sometimes it doesn't work.
And where are they going to, Steve?
Well, quite often they'd be going into residential units.
You have to accept that you can't win every time, that you're not going to... It's not going to work every single time. There may be a clash of personalities. They may work somewhere else, but it's not. You're not going to win every single time. You have to accept that.
And a lot of young people can't actually cope with the responsibility of being in a family environment, because it does put an onus on people to behave in a certain way. And some young people that have come from very dysfunctional families can't actually manage that environment themselves.
So, I mean, there are foster carers that have a lot younger children, and they do have a lot more moves home. But at the end we are now, we don't normally have moves home, we move to independence. Yeah. So you're looking at preparing a young person so they know how to cook, so they can survive, they know how to budget, which is a little bit more difficult. They know how to do their own washing and things like that. So it's preparing them for independence and setting them on their own. Obviously, if they want to come back and see us, that's brilliant. And if ever they need a hand, they know that we're at the other end of a phone call.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you both get out of fostering? Because you're seasoned pros, you've done it a long time. Where do you get your rewards?
I think one of the things that we decided fairly early on, that there's always been a situation where a lot of young people that have been in care become parents, and then their children come into care. And we've always looked at our primary role is breaking that cycle, so that the kids that we foster, their kids won't come into care. And generally, we've been pretty successful at that.
Yeah, but you get, like, we had one young man who joined the army.
Yeah.
And we went to his passing out parade, was probably one of the most proud times we've ever had.
Yeah.
But our young lady, who I was discussing earlier, who lives independently, has got a full-time job, and comes around and cooks for us. He's brilliant.
Brilliant.
No, but you can find little gems anywhere, little diamonds everywhere of rewards.
Now, you mentioned earlier on that you have your own daughter, and you were talking about the dynamics of her relationship, having your time, versus the children and young people you fostered. What effect, if any, has your fostering had on her?
I think she's become a more rounded person. She's seen an awful lot of things. And with her son living with us at the moment, for our foster home review, he has to fill out a form to say how he feels about fostering. And he's quite proud of being part of a fostering family and helping young people that live with us, and hopefully being a role model.
I think perhaps she's a better mum.
I think so. I mean, it's very difficult because it's all she's ever known.
Yeah.
But I think she'd certainly agree that it's been a positive effect on her life.
And for her, I mean, as well, she's got siblings that she wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, our young lady was in my car last Sunday, and we were talking about my next birthday, which is a big one. And the next thing I know, I turned around and said, what are you doing? She said, I'm texting my sister because we need to do something for this. And she was texting our daughter. So
that's nice.
Yes.
That's nice. And it speaks volumes, doesn't it? Now, as foster carers, what support do you receive? Because, you get financial support for doing this. You're not expected to fund this out of your own money, are you?
No. There's fees and allowances. It has been very difficult of late, particularly with the big increases in the cost of living last year. But there are fees and allowances available that are paid to carers. With support, with help the young people, there's support groups that run twice a month. There's a regular support group and a therapeutic support group, which Jen co-runs.
But it's about, one of the support groups is run by foster carers and one's run by social workers.
Yeah.
And you form a network of foster carers too. I mean, we've got one in our house, looking after our children while we're here.
Yeah.
There's also the Dudley Foster Carer Voice.
Yeah, which is a body which represents carers and has regular meetings with the fostering service around the issues that are affecting carers. And, of course, and with the WhatsApp group, I mean, when carers are experiencing difficulties, they can put it up on the WhatsApp group and somebody, more than one person, will reply and provide support, because most of us have dealt with the issues that you're likely to come up against.
Yeah.
Now, of course, this is a partnership between you and, you know, the relevant local authority, which in this case is Dudley Council's Children's Services team. How do you rate the quality of support that you receive from them and helping you along the way?
Yeah. I think, like a lot of things, during COVID, things were incredibly difficult. And I think a lot of carers felt very isolated because people couldn't visit.
Thing is, in COVID, everybody felt a bit isolated, yeah. But it was more compounded when you've got looked after children in the house and trying to keep everybody going in that scary time. But
subsequent to that, things have really improved a lot with Dudley Fostering.
Yeah.
We get on very well with our supervising social worker. We're on the same page. Manager of the fostering service is very supportive. I speak with her myself regularly when I see her, and she's prepared to provide support when it's needed to individual carers if there's a struggle. But
there's also an out of hours line,
yeah,
that the fostering team run, which is vital, because if something's going to happen, it's not normally in 9 to 5, it's 2 in the morning or whatever, and you might need somebody to, you might even need somebody to come out, but somebody to talk to. They're always there for that.
Mm.
And there's a buddying scheme as well, because when you're a new carer, you might have something happen and think, well, I don't really want to ask a social worker because they'll think I'm stupid. And they don't, but that's how you feel. But it's much easier to ring another foster carer and say, look, you know, am I going to daft here because this has happened and I've no idea what I'm supposed to be doing?
If, for anybody who's sitting there listening to this, teetering on the brink of actually taking that next step, what would you say to them to encourage them to do so?
That's a difficult one.
Well, you can make a difference.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but you can make a difference. And if you make a difference with one young person, then everything's worth it.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had a number of jobs over the years, from home shop delivery for Asda, driving a minibus. But to be honest, for many years I felt that this was actually what I was meant to do. and this is what I'm good at, and something that I'm actually making a difference to the lives of young people.
I mean, standing on a beach in Norfolk in November with a rain max on and scarves and gloves, and watching kids that have never seen the sea just run on the beach. Mm-hmm. You don't need any more rewards than that. It fills your heart.
But I think it's, yeah, whatever you can do, it will make a difference.
Where would you sign people to go to within Dudley Borough if they're looking at taking that next step? Where can we get more information?
Okay, if you look on the Dudley website and search for fostering, I think there's links in there to the fostering service where you can complete the complete the details to arrange for an inquiries meeting.
And somebody will ring you back.
Yeah, and somebody will call back. And they are asking where you got the information from these days to see if the advertising is working.
I think it's also important to point out that at any point along the way, if you suddenly realise that you think, oh, crumbs, this isn't for me, you can call it quits.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Point.
And you can pause it as well. If
can you
need, yeah, if you get part of the way through it and something's happened and you need to stop a little bit, make sure you're completely ready yourself, you can do that.
Yeah, people's lives change.
Yeah, things happen. Things have happened in our lives that we've had to step back a little bit, take a few less children and then restart because, you know, we've had elderly parents and things like that happen.
Well, it's a fascinating subject and it's lovely to chat with you. And I think, you know, the one thing I've taken away from this is that anybody can do it as long as they meet the criteria that's required. And just go and do it. Just go and find out.
Yes.
Well, the need is there. There's an awful lot of kids that are in care that need foster carers. You can just do so much good.
Indeed. Your final thoughts, Jenny?
You've only got to see one smile. You've only got to have one hand reach for yours. And that's it.
Jenny and Steve Honour, thank you both very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 6:00 p.m. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by me, Clive Payne, and produced by Andy Caddick.